Good morning. So happy to see you all. It's our pleasure this morning to have Andy Knott from the Sierra Club Beyond Coal Campaign here in Missouri. So he is charged with coordinating statewide strategy for moving Missouri from coal to clean energy. And before coming to our state, his 28-year career in Indiana and Michigan has focused on air and water quality and energy policy for environmental organizations and state and tribal governments, including the Hoosier Environmental Council and the Watershed Center Grand Traverse Bay. Andy's.
We got to get you hooked up so we can hear you. Please.
Sorry. Oh, sure. While I'm doing this, I want to thank Cindy for coordinating a lot of this program this morning and bringing quiche and pastry. So thank you very much.
That just can hook on your shirt. Thank you.
Is that good?
Yep.
People hear that in?
Okay.
Let me put this somewhere. Okay. Well, thank you all, and thank you, Cindy, for inviting me. I'm sort of pinch hitting for a colleague, Sarah Edgar, who's our one of our organizing managers here in the region. So I've taken her slides and made a few changes to them. But as Cindy said, I work for the Beyond Coal campaign here in Missouri. I also do some work in Illinois, and we'll talk a little bit about what that campaign means. Can everybody see the screen okay if I stand here? So are people familiar with the Sierra Club? So the Sierra Club was formed in 1892 by John Muir. It's the oldest and largest grassroots environmental organization in the country. And when we say grassroots, part of that is that not only do we have a lot of thousands of volunteers, but we're also driven by those volunteers. So there's a national board that is made up of elected volunteers. And then at the state level, there's a chapter, and then there are state volunteers that are running that as volunteers that are elected to the board. And then at the local level too. So here we have the Eastern Missouri group. So it's very bottom up in terms of its structure. And I happen to work for National. I just happen to be based here in St. Louis, and again, work mostly in Missouri. The Beyond Coal campaign started, the roots of this started in the mid-2000s. Y'all may remember back then we had for president George W. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney. And Dick Cheney had an energy committee that he was running. It was mostly behind the scenes. There was some controversy around that because it was sort of hidden from the public. But one of the goals of Dick Cheney was to bring back coal. And there was back then in the late 2000s, there were close to 200 proposed new coal plants. So this campaign started its first phase. Oh yeah, that's much better. Thank you. So it started, the first phase of the Beyond Coal campaign was to stop the coal rush, is what it was called. We did not want more polluting coal in the country. It really didn't make a lot of sense economically anyway. There are much, much cheaper sources of energy, including wind and solar, coming online. So the Beyond Coal campaign was very successful. We stopped, it wasn't just us, it was Sierra Club works in partnership with many organizations nationally and locally. But this coalition did manage to stop the vast majority of those. There were 26 that were built. You'll see, that doesn't show up very well. doesn't show up. One of them was built in Springfield, Missouri.
If you want, you can use
this. Oh,
gadget.
Oh, yeah.
The red button.
Oh, very cool. Cool, thank you.
Yeah. Always fun to play with toys.
Yeah. I'm not sure why it's not on here. It must have been an error, but there was a new coal unit. It was an existing power plant, but a boiler was built in Springfield, Missouri in 2010. So we didn't stop all of them, but we stopped most of them. And then the next phase of the campaign was to, let's see.
Point it up toward this projector, maybe.
It's not controlling your slides. All it is a laser pointer.
Ah. Thank you. Okay, so the next phase of the campaign was to work to retire existing coal plants. There are hundreds of coal plants around the country, and it's kind of hard to see, but the gray circles are coal plants that have been either retired fully or proposed to be retired. The yellow, that's where the entire plant, the yellow is when maybe a part of the plant. So the way coal plants work, you could have one boiler at a coal plant, or you could have multiple ones, like four or five. So sometimes we get the company to agree to retire just a boiler or a unit as opposed to the whole plant. And sometimes they do it in phases. An example is Ameren's Meramec coal plant, which is on the south side of the county, where the Meramec River meets the Mississippi. That has four units, four coal boilers. They agreed in 2014, they announced that they would convert that to gas and retire it totally by 2022. So what they've done so far is they've converted half of it to natural gas. So two out of the four units are cleaner than they were before. And then they will ultimately retire the whole thing and not burn any fossil fuels at that plant in the next 4 years. So that's an example of where, you know, they do this in phases. But there are a lot of other units in Missouri. This one, here we go. This one is the James River plant in Springfield. It is fully retired from coal. Again, they converted it to natural gas, and they are gonna stop that fairly quickly too. When you convert an old coal plant to natural gas, it's not really probably going to operate very long because it wasn't really built to burn that fuel. And it's less efficient than a newer natural gas plant would be. So this is just a list of the units that have been retired in Missouri. Probably the most relevant is the total of almost 2,600 megawatts of coal. So average coal plant is probably about, let's see, the Meramec plant is 924 megawatts. So, you know, that's about what you'd expect in an average large plant. Well, obviously, a lot of these are smaller. But we made a lot of progress in Missouri. And a lot of this is being replaced with clean energy, and we'll talk about that. One of the things about Missouri is that we're very reliant on coal, which is a little odd given that we don't really mine any coal here. There's one coal mine in Missouri. It's over just south of Kansas City, and it supplies a very small amount of coal to an industry over in Kansas. So we get all of our coal from Wyoming, the Powder River Basin. A little bit that may come occasionally from Illinois, but these days it's pretty much mostly from Wyoming. And we, as a consequence, we're exporting, I think it's a little over $1.4 billion a year in expenses for that coal, the cost of that coal that go really to, a lot of it goes to Peabody, but it's mostly for production of coal in Wyoming. So 75% of our electricity in Missouri comes from coal. We're about 5% wind and solar right now. In St. Louis, where we rely on Ameren, Ameren is about 70 to 71% coal right now. They have proposed some improvements, and we'll talk about those in a little bit. And nationally, we're way above the average. National average is 30%. We are sort of a little ahead of the middle of the game in terms of installed wind capacity. We have pretty good wind resource in Missouri. It's mostly north central, northwest, and southwest Missouri. And a little known fact, the little town of Rockport, Missouri, which is 1,200 people, became the first city in the country to go 100% wind back in 2008, 10 years ago. And it's north of Kansas City, so it's in a fairly windy part of the state. And they built a few wind turbines to power that city. We're not doing too great in terms of energy efficiency. This is a ranking from the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. And every year we're pretty low in terms of energy efficiency. So we have a long way to go there. And that's something that the Missouri chapter works quite a bit on. We're about to get the city of St. Louis to adopt the most recent building codes, the 2018 building code. So that will help reduce our energy consumption. I'll go ahead and talk about some of the advancements in wind here, because I think it's probably relevant. I mentioned that Ameren is at 70% coal. They're at about 1% wind and solar right now, very small compared to some other cities, which I'll show later. But they are making some progress. Last fall, they announced they were going to add another 700 megawatts of wind in the next 2 years. And that would take them from about 1% to about 8%. So that's progress. They've also proposed a plan that would allow large corporations and cities, like University City, to purchase wind power through them. And that could add another 400 megawatts of wind. So they have, just in the last few months, made some pretty major announcements for them, because they've been so coal dependent. Now they are trying to change, it appears. And we're encouraging them to do that. These are where Ameren's coal plants are around us. It's a lot of people don't realize that they're all here because they're really kind of out in the rural areas. This is the Sioux plant. If you ever go to Alton, you can see it pretty well from Alton. This is the Labadie plant on the Missouri River. This is the Merrimack plant that I talked about earlier. It's retiring. And this is the Rush Island plant down in the Mississippi.
What happens at a plant? Is that where they burn the coal?
Yes, yes. Yeah, so they burn the coal there. They boil water, and they use that steam to turn a turbine to generate electricity. So that's how it works. Yeah.
And then they also collect those things there too, don't they?
They also what? Well, so yeah, so they, these are, these are the byproducts of burning coal. Air pollution is the biggest thing. There's also, I don't think we have a slide on the water pollution issue, but small gas, grain, soot, these are small particles, ozone, which is basically a lung irritant. We have, clean air days here around here, or red air days, or yellow air days, that's because of the ozone. So like yesterday, my wife and I were driving out on 44 to go hiking out west of town, and there was a sign on the highway that said Saturday was a yellow air day to carpool. So that's because some of the pollution that comes from cars also comes from power plants and helps create ozone pollution. Greenhouse gases are basically carbon dioxide. We're concerned about climate change, and all of these are forms of air pollution. There's also waste that's when you burn coal, you have ash left over, and that coal ash they dump in. Unfortunately, Ameren is dumping them in unlined ponds. That's how they dispose of it, and those ponds leak into the groundwater. So that's something else that we work on, let's try to correct. Here we do have coal ash, so I forgot the slide. So these are the kinds of pollutants that are in coal ash. There's a federal rule that just became effective in March that requires all the utilities to report this information. So now we know how much of this is in the groundwater around the Amber plants. Yes?
There is an article on the front page of business section today on coal ash.
I haven't read that yet, but I heard it was coming out. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, this is very timely because this requirement from the federal government just came into effect in March. So a lot of this data is now becoming public for the first time. We knew this was happening, but now it's probably in the article. Now they have to report it publicly. You can actually go to Ameren's website and read about the how much of this is in the groundwater that they found. This is basically just how a graphic, because this comes from every year there's a report that comes out from an investment company called Lazard, and it's their cost of energy report. And basically what this is showing is that how cheap alternatives to coal are. Energy efficiency is the cheapest. I understand that this building is now Energy Star certified. You all, not only is one of the solar panels, but you've made the building more efficient. The cheapest amount of energy that you're ever going to get is that you don't use, so you don't pay for it. So energy efficiency is really the best, your first best option. In terms of saving money on energy. And then after that, wind is very cost competitive, and solar is actually becoming more and more cost competitive every day with coal. And we've seen a lot of small municipal utilities around the state putting in solar farms. And you've got like small towns like Butler, Missouri. I think there's 3,000 people that live there. Fulton. I mean, very small towns, and they're doing it not because they have to. There's no law requiring them to put these solar farms in. They're doing it because it's becoming cheaper and cheaper, and they know in the long run it's going to save their customers money. This was a faith walk that we held a couple of years ago. Again, my colleague Sarah Edgar helped organize this, and we work quite a bit with. Do you recognize some people in there?
Well, I know we were.
Were you there?
Yes.
Yeah, I think this was right after the tornado, right? Remember that? It was very. We weren't sure if we were going to have the event because of the weather, But anyway, just an example of sort of the partnerships that the Sierra Club has. We work with a wide variety of organizations, and we all share the same concern. It's interesting. I attended. Did anybody else here go to the St. Louis University Climate Conference a couple of weeks ago? Did you go to the?
Not the whole summit, but.
Did you go to the Bill Nye thing? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. It was a really interesting conference, two-day conference. I would say it was the only conference I've ever been to where the speakers were either scientists or faith leaders, and that was it, pretty much. And it was a great melding of both concerns of the faith community with the science of climate change and how can we all work together to try to mitigate that problem. It was very inspirational, and this all came out of course, St. Louis University is a Catholic university, and the Pope has spoken out quite a bit about climate change. Try to wrap this up in terms of what we've been doing locally, and Cindy and Paul were very involved in this. Last fall in October, early October, we had a resolution adopted by the City of St. Louis Board of Aldermen that set a goal of moving to 100% clean energy. And these were some of the key reasons why a lot of cities are doing this. And I think I have a slide that will show all the cities around the country that are doing this. Again, this is about creating jobs. The energy efficiency industry is the top industry in terms of energy jobs, followed by solar installation. So the more we can do to sort of change over our energy system, the more jobs we can create. It's also going to save money, as I showed earlier. It improves air and water quality, public health, sort of some of the things we've already covered. And it also builds on the foundation for climate action. So the City of St. Louis has already done a lot of things. They have a sustainability plan. They have a climate action plan. They've both the board and the mayor have signed on to the Paris Accord. The Paris Accord is this big international agreement on climate change, which President Trump is pulling us out of, unfortunately. There's a new rule in St. Louis City where all large buildings above a certain size have to report their energy use. So they don't have to do anything about it. They just have to report it. And that serves as an incentive. It's like if I'm a building manager and I see, oh, wow, I'm spending, you know, every year I'm spending this amount of money on energy, then maybe I should do something to reduce those expenses. Some other clean energy initiatives that the city has done the last few years. A lot of good activity in the city. So these are cities around the country that have, this looks like we've updated this since last fall, but these are all the cities that have agreed they want to move to 100% clean energy. If you look up Sierra Club Ready for 100, you'll find information about this, because that's the name of the campaign that's trying to move cities and states to 100% clean energy. So we've made a lot of progress there. This is interesting. So this is from a Stanford University. It's called their Solutions Project. And they looked at every state and what it would take to go to 100% clean energy. So it looks at, we would probably want to go to 60% wind. Let me get the pointer here. So we probably want to get to 60% wind. We'll do it in 24 solar, and then sort of a mixture of all these other things. They listed how many jobs all this would create. Again, Stanford University, it's called the Solutions Project, if you want to look it up. We're also seeing a big movement among businesses. These are all large companies that have a footprint in the St. Louis region that have offices or buildings here or retail outlets. These are all members of a group called Ready, RE100, Renewable Energy 100. There are a lot more around the country than this. These are just the ones that are here in the St. Louis region. So again, these are companies that basically they made a commitment to go to 100% clean energy. This is where we're at around the state. Again, I mentioned Rockport, Missouri earlier. Kansas City, this is actually Kansas City Power and Light, which is like the Ameren for that area. It's not a city-owned utility. It's an independently owned company. It's a private company. But Kansas City Power and Light is way ahead of Ameren, which is down here at 1% currently. I mentioned earlier, we'll get to 8% in a couple of years, assuming they build all that wind that they're planning. But look at Springfield, Missouri. They're really the leaders on clean energy. They still have one coal plant, I mentioned it earlier, and there's still some environmental and health issues with that coal plant, but they are trying to change things quite a bit. They've closed, I mentioned they've closed one of their coal plants, and they've contracted for quite a bit of wind, and they've also installed some solar farms. So they're really the leaders in Missouri right now. So this is just to wrap up, these are things that you can do to get involved in the campaign. Obviously, you can volunteer at the Sierra Club. So I mentioned the Resolution 124 that we worked on last fall. That, again, sets a goal for the city of St. Louis to go to 100% clean energy. And there's going to be a stakeholder process to develop a plan for that. So if you're interested in getting involved, let me know and we can put you on the list. But there will be a public process. It may, even if you don't want to be, come to multiple meetings about this, there will be public meetings. So you might be able to come to a public presentation about that resolution. Obviously, spread the word and get others involved. It's very helpful to get letters to the editor written. A great thing to do is if you see, you probably already know this, but if you see an article like the one that's in today's paper about coal ash, then maybe write a letter to the editor about that topic, and it's more likely that they'll publish it because you can relate it to that article that they just published. You can encourage your mayor to commit to the Mayors for Clean Energy program. As I mentioned, the University City Mayor, Shelley Welsh, is she still the mayor? Did she?
No.
So she did.
Okay,
so Ms. Shelley Welsh did sign on to this, but we need to get the new mayor probably to reiterate that. Yeah. So we can talk about how to help with that. But one thing you can do, I pass these around, you can take one if you want. These are postcards that you can use to send to your mayor. If you want, you can fill them out and give them back to me and we'll mail them to your mayor. But basically it's a urging them to join this Mayors for Clean Energy Pledge. Basically, all they do is they say that I support this goal and I will work with my community to develop a plan to meet that goal. It's not like they have to decide, they have to, start doing things. I mean, they should start doing things right away, but they don't have to, commit to a very hard goal. The other word saying is that I will work on this project with my community. And of course, you can just follow, we have a Missouri Beyond Coal Facebook and Twitter feed that you can find. I think that's it, and I'm happy to take any questions, or yes, sir.
I heard you talking or showing us economic incentives for shift and change, also public health. You have avoided the polarizing language, and you haven't divided anybody into good guys and bad guys.
I try. Thank you.
can you say some more about the language that's out there?
Say something about the language?
The language that's out there in the world.
Yeah. So
in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I mean,
with regard to coal.
Yeah, it can be a fairly negative place to be in. I work in Illinois, and there in Springfield, Illinois, there's a municipal utility there. They have a coal plant, and it's got four boilers, and two of them are really, from a boiler standpoint, they need to be retired. They're very old, and they're built in 1968, 1972. That is really beyond the useful life of a thing like this, like a machine like this. These coal plants can be. The mayor and the city council are finally getting around to thinking about doing this. They're going to vote on Tuesday on a plan to develop a long-range plan, and that long-range plan will decide when they retire these units, probably in the next 5 years. A colleague that I have over there has posted on the local Sierra Club Facebook page information about coming to this meeting on Tuesday, and the only comments so far have been sort of attacks from people who think that this is basically about killing jobs. And so that's sort of, that's one end of the spectrum, that's sort of the negative end of the spectrum. And on the positive end, you have places like Springfield, Missouri, the other Springfield. Again, they're not perfect. They have problems, some serious problems with coal ash disposal, which I won't get into. But they are, every year, it seems like they're adding more and more wind and solar, and it's because of the economics. You know, they, it's and they're creating jobs. One of their most recent projects is a battery storage project. So you might hear a lot in the media, oh well, the wind doesn't blow all the time, and the sun doesn't shine all the time. So what do? You know, you can run a coal plant 24 hours a day. Of course, if you do that, you're going to create all that pollution. But they say, well, you know, wind and solar, they're not reliable. First of all, if you put enough wind and solar, it's always going to be windy somewhere, and it's always going to be, you know, there are ways of dealing with that on the grid. You put enough wind up. But what Springfield, Missouri is doing is they've built a, in partnership with a battery company in Springfield called North Star, they built a 1 megawatt hour battery pilot project. And that's creating local jobs. And this is a local battery company that is now moving into this sort of this long-term storage business for the utility industry. And it's such a big deal that they actually stole one of the local utilities employees, the engineer who was working on it. So now he's going to go work for them and help sell this to other utilities, to other businesses. And that's a great example of a way that clean energy really is transforming both our environment, but also the economy. There's one other thing. There's a video. I can't show it because we don't have the technology to work out. But I just want to talk about this for a second. The Sierra Club next month is releasing this video called "Reinventing Power," this is just the trailer, which the actual movie is about an hour long. And we're going to be showing this at KDHX on June 26th at 7 p.m. And it's all about the positive aspect of this. It's all about folks who have who are benefiting their communities. Both again, health-wise, but also from the economy perspective. And there's a local example in this movie. There's a solar company here called Straight Up Solar. I don't know. So Straight Up Solar, based here in the region. There's one of their workers is a former coal miner. He's like a fourth generation coal miner. He's from Illinois. His name is Matt Rauscher. And so this film crew that made this movie came to St. Louis to use that example. There's about 8 or 9 different examples from around the country in the movie. But anyway, they interviewed Matt. They showed him and his crew putting on solar on a house across the river in Illinois. They came to Straight Up's headquarters. Is it in Creekcore? I don't know where it is. All of that. Anyway, just over here. They came to and they interviewed the executives. So if you come to see this movie, you'll see a great local example of this. Matt, he says in the movie, it's like, if you had told me years ago that I'm a fourth generation coal miner, I'd be installing solar panels. You know, I'd think, wow, I'm not a hippie. You know, but he's doing it, and it's a great job for him. He's really, really, you know, helping to make that transition for the community.
Why don't you take that question? Okay, we'll go this way in the back.
Well, is it the Sierra Club that was responsible for the radio ads a couple of years ago at black stations? did some targeting.
We
had an interesting thing.
We may have. I know we advertise in the American a lot. I'm not sure about the radio. We may have done some radio.
Yeah, there were some radio spots, and I wasn't sure about.
Yeah.
Well, it was about. It linked it to the increase in asthma, the black community,
yeah.
The black minister and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, Reverend Burton. That's another video. One of our big partners is Reverend Roderick Burton, who's the pastor of New Northside Missionary Baptist Church. We did a video with him. I think you did do some radio ads with us too. Yeah, you're right.
Is that going to continue, or?
If we can, it's a nonprofit. It's always about money. You know, what do we have? But that was a great example. And Reverend Burton put solar panels in his church too, and he came and spoke. Was one of our expert panelists in October at a St. Louis Board of Aldermen meeting where we were getting that resolution passed. He really actually changed the whole conversation at that meeting and helped move forward. But
yeah. One of my biggest fear is that we're going to lose the battle with the energy company. That Ameren has a 20-acre field that's near O'Fallon, and I'm wondering whether or not is that the public going to lose out to energy companies because they will build the solar plants, and then there we go again. We'll be grid right back into that system when we have a technology now that you can pretty much operate on your own.
Mm-hmm.
We did it individually from house to house or from neighborhood to neighborhood.
Yeah, and that's a big debate that happens in this energy sector. Obviously, the best solution would be for everyone to have solar panels on their home, or a lot of people, the majority of people, and to be more independent, right? And is that your point?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's tough in a state like Missouri. We did have under the renewable initiative that was passed by voters in 2008, there was a carve out for rebates. So, but what happened is, that was fairly limited. It was really sort of what we could get done politically. Unfortunately, what we're seeing is what you're describing, is that utility, I mean, it's good and bad. I mean, it's good that the utilities are finally getting around to realizing that solar is cost effective, but it's bad in that they're going to, again, monopolize the system. And, you know, all I can say is, you know, we need more and more folks to get involved and try to change that. Because it's going to take political action to change the laws and the rules in Missouri to make it more equitable for an average homeowner to actually do this. I just have to say it's sort of a good and bad. I mean, we'd rather see it more distributed, but at least they're finally getting around to doing it. So obviously I'd rather see it more distributed and more people involved, because I think that's democracy too. I mean, that's a big part of this, and that's also kind of why we're saying why reinventing power. Reinventing power is not just about power of energy, but it's also our power as citizens. So, yeah.
When Trump first announced that he was going to pull out of the Paris Accord, there were cities, at least a few cities, that passed resolutions saying that they would continue the guidelines of the Paris Accord. Has that taken off? Are there more?
I don't know how many more there are now, but I mean, St. Louis is one of those, and I don't have an updated list off the top of my head in terms of how many have done that. But there was a big movement back then last year. And there was a meeting in Miami. It was the Conference of Mayors, and a lot of those folks were there because of that, and they made a pledge there. Yeah. Yes.
Do you think the whole state of California agree to do that as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know in California now it's required that all new homes
Yes.
I equipped with solar panels.
It just happened, yeah.
So it's just so such a stark contrast to see what can happen when there's the political will.
Yeah. Yeah.
To do that.
Yeah, that's the difference between, you know, the political setting, yeah, in the back and then looking around here.
I've heard the opposite of what Brenda's saying, that it will really be the economics that will drive the change, that the fact that it will become more economically make sense rather than using coal, et cetera. So the businesses will drive the change more than governments. What do you think of that?
I think it's both. I do think that that's sort of, that's the solace that we have in this age of the current administration, is that there's nothing that Trump talks about wanting to bring back coal. There's nothing that he can do about the economics. So, that's what gives me hope these days, is that, you know, until we can make a change in the political system, at least the economics are changing in our favor. Yeah.
What do we know about the energy sustainability of some of the big construction projects that are happening or are going to happen? The one that is happening, for example, Ballpark Village expansion, and the one that's coming is the NGA in Northside.
I'm not an expert on that topic. I believe that they have solar panels at Ballpark Village, the existing. I think they did that, and I assume they'll do it with the expansion. One of the things that we're trying to do at the NGA facility is get these new building codes adopted in the city of St. Louis, because right now we're operating under building codes that are several years old. I can see this is not my area of expertise, but
years old.
You know.
So,
I'm a property manager, and they're just telling me to be sure that every single bedroom has a smoke detector. It's not good enough.
Yeah.
Carbon monoxide detector.
Yeah. So we're about to get the 2018, the most recent building codes adopted in St. Louis. The ordinance was introduced Friday, the day before yesterday, and so hopefully in the next few weeks that will get adopted, and a lot of that's because of things like NGA. It's like we want to, in the development that's going to happen around it too. It's like, you know, all the ancillary businesses and residences that will come into that area, we want to make sure that they're built to the most efficient standards. Cindy,
would you talk a little bit about water quality or problems associated with coal and just in this area in general, if we have concerns about our water? We actually had an outdoor worship service last week that was focused on water, and we live around a lot of important rivers. And
I don't know
what the watershed is.
Let's go back to this map. So again, this is where Ameren's coal plants are.
It's not showing.
Nothing's going on. Oh, I can just talk about it. That's fine. So I showed earlier, there's a map. Most coal plants are built on water. So they need water for steam, and they need water for cooling. So all of Ameren's coal plants are built. Two of them are on the Mississippi, the Sioux plant up north and the Rush Island plant down south. The Merrimack plant is on the Merrimack River right at the mouth of the Mississippi, so it's right next to both rivers. And then the Labadie plant is on the Missouri River. They're all in floodplains. When they take their ash from burning coal and they put them in, they call them ash ponds. They would use water to sluice the ash into these ponds, and that was back in the 60s and 50s, 60s and 70s, that was thought of as being a safe way of getting rid of this stuff. Obviously, it's not safe. They didn't put liners in these ponds, so they're basically sitting in groundwater. So if you dig into the ground next to the Merrimack River, just a few feet, you're going to hit groundwater. right? It's going to get the same elevation as the river. And so this ash is sitting in the same groundwater that's flowing through the ground into the river. So those are the big concerns. We definitely have arsenic and borax are the two things that we found in this new data that just started coming out in March that we're finding in the groundwater around these ash ponds. So Amber will say, this is not a big deal, nobody drinks that water. Is that really a responsible thing to say? I mean, you know, it's like, and how long is it going to take for that pollution to get to where people do drink the water? And how's it going to affect the habitat and the life, the organisms that live in that water in the rivers? This is very controversial. Amarin says everything's fine. Here's another great sort of beacon of hope. A week ago, Amarin had its annual shareholder meeting, and there's a group here in St. Louis called the Midwest Coalition for Responsible Investment. This is a faith-based, led organization. Sister Barbara Jennings, a Catholic nun, is the director, and they do shareholder advocacy. We do some of that too, but we work with a lot of other groups. And Sister Barbara introduced a resolution for Amarin's annual shareholder meeting that would require the utility to do a study on these impacts of this coal ash. And last year, the resolution got 46% of the vote. This year, it got 53% of the vote passed, despite unanimous objection by the Amarin Board of Directors. So here is an example where shareholders are listening to the faith community that's promoting sort of an ethics-based responsibility around these threats. And they're like, yeah, 53% of the shareholders said, yeah, these folks are right. The company should figure out what they're going to do about this problem. So that's just something that happened a week ago that gave me a lot of hope. So there's another question back here.
Yeah, the tariffs on imported solar panels, is that going to bring all the progress to a crashing halt, or is there going to be a domestic source that's reasonable enough in price that can take over?
Yeah, I don't know enough about that to say exactly. What I've heard from other people, including I know a person who runs one of the biggest solar companies down in Springfield, in Missouri. He feels that it's going to slow it down, but not stop it. It is going to slow one of the things that the solar companies were saying that this is going to slow the creation of jobs, and that's certainly true. The good news is that's only going to last a couple of years, and then the tariff will go away, hopefully. So it could have been a lot worse in terms of what we were thinking the president might do. And it's not great, but we don't think it's like a game changer totally. It's just going to slow some things down for a little while. So, yeah.
I saw most of the coal is on the east part of the country, which apparently there's not much coal on the other half. Is there a point at which this solves itself by coal just running away and getting, it's not renewable,
mm-hmm.
really, is it? Or
no.
So. We got a lot of coal.
A couple million years.
Ago. Oh, yeah. you mean in terms of how much coal is in the ground, or? There's hundreds of years of coal in the ground, and that's part of the issue is we have to keep it there. That's a big part of the campaign is keeping it in the ground, not just the coal, but also the oil and natural gas, because if we burn all the fossil fuels that are in the ground, then planet is literally toast. I mean, it's like you have to stop doing this in order to stop climate change. It's going to make the planet uninhabitable to humans. So, that's part of this is we just have to stop burning fossil fuels. But the other thing that we're doing is working on electrification, so electric vehicles. The other thing is that we also can't stop climate change by just focusing on power plants. I mean, how much carbon dioxide comes out of our vehicles, too. So we have to convert our transportation system over to electricity and have that powered by clean power, too, by wind and solar. So, yeah.
This map encourages me to take us to West Virginia. In the late 1990s, I was with a faculty group from Washington, D.C., and we went to, I think it's Welch or Welch County, West Virginia. It's the southernmost and poorest county in West Virginia. I would say nearly 100% of the economy is from coal mining. Coal miners, you know, generations have worked in the mines. At that time, there wasn't talk about clean energy. The concerns were, the only environmental issue that I kind of remember was how to mine the coal. There was a method of stripping the trees off of mountainsides and drilling down. I forget exactly what that was. That was about the only environmental issue. The issues were with the unions and the mine owners, really, and the health of the miners. My question is this, maybe it gets back to Paul's comment about, I don't think you used, well, rhetoric and language. Talk now about retraining and new jobs. I think about these people in Welch, West Virginia. I would dare say that some of them, maybe many of them, are near illiterate. Mm-hmm. They know how to mine coal, and that's about it. Are they retrainable? How much of the new energy and the new jobs would locate in Welch, West Virginia? So what are the responses to those kinds of questions?
Yeah, and that's, it's tough, especially for that example, because it is so dependent on coal. I know there are efforts to do that. I've seen examples of, there's Appalachian Voices is an organization that's based in the Appalachians, obviously, and that's one of their programs is to work with communities to train folks to install solar panels. There was a federal bill, I'm not remember the name of it, since we don't really mine coal in Missouri, I didn't follow it that closely, but there was a federal bill that was proposed by President Obama that would have allocated money for things like that. And so, I mean, we certainly supported that. The thing that I can talk about is that there are examples of the Sierra Club working with unions and local communities when a coal plant closes. Maybe not, I don't have a coal mining example, but I know in Washington State, there's an example where we worked with a because when you close down a coal plant, it can also hurt the local economy, right? It's like not only are you hurting the workers, but those jobs are lost, then that's an economic drain on the community too, like the taxes and everything. So we do have a program to work with those interests, and we have a white paper that could actually, if you want, I'd like to get it to you, but it has examples of the communities where not just Sierra Club, but other environmental groups have worked with the unions and the local community to set aside some money. The company should be responsible to its employees. They shouldn't just retire the plant immediately. They should give some advanced warning. They should try to move folks around, do early retirements, things like that, so that the workers are taken care of. We call it just transition. It should get a transition that takes place with a certain amount of justice for everyone involved. And so we're having these conversations in Springfield, Illinois, because of the unions that are working at that coal plant that looks like it might be retired. An example of how not to do it is when Dynegy a couple of years ago announced they were closing the Wood River plant in Alton. They just basically closed it within a few months. They did not give the workers hardly any time for a transition. So some of this is, it's a collaboration. It's going to take the company and the folks who are advocating for this transition to work together to make it happen in a fair way. Yeah.
too much of this, if you drip back to history, from a farm economy and society to a war economy and society in World War II, this country basically took teenagers from the farm who had never left their county and operated some of the most sophisticated equipment known to mankind and won two wars. It's there. I don't think it's a big deal. Switching one way or another, if we have the will, exactly. We will do it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But is the compensation comparable? I mean, coal miners, relatively speaking, are well paid compared to some.
So that,
I mean, is it, are those, is that comparable?
Yeah, I mean, well,
will they ever be paid that much money?
Right.
Again, nobody gets paid that way.
Right. That's a good point. Pays well, part of it's dangerous, right? And
yeah.
It's a lot of hard work. But you're right. And part of our just transition campaign is to, a lot of solar companies, they're not union.
Right.
So, so you go from a situation where you have a coal plant or a coal mine where it's union and you have good representation to a situation where you're not. And so our argument is that these new jobs and this new economy need to be family-sustaining wages. Whether it's union or not, they need to pay well enough, because you're right, it's not exactly the same pay scale. Yeah.
So there have been any number of situations, particularly here in Missouri, where local municipalities try to enact things that they think will be improvements for their community, and the state government comes in and says, no, you can't do that. Are there any kinds of things like that surrounding the kinds of issues that you're talking about? If the city of St. Louis would choose to do something progressive in the line of energy, are there forces in Jefferson City that would push back against it?
It's something we worry about. I'll say that. Fortunately, it hasn't happened yet. In fact, if that were going to happen, it would be because Ameren, because Ameren wanted that to happen. I think we're at a point where, as we said earlier, the economics are such that even Ameren realizes that this is a bandwagon they should probably be jumping on. So we had the resolution introduced in September. There was a response in the media from Ameren basically saying, we support this, we support our customers, desire to go to more clean energy. It was a few days later they announced these plans to do that themselves, to make some improvements themselves. So I'm hopeful that won't happen in this case, but I have worried about that as these communities are doing this. So yeah, I mean, we need to worry about that. We need to stay vigilant about that. All right. Thank you so much.